What's it all for?
Various artists.
Ento Yeldizyan is a Tamaki-based artist of Armenian heritage who works amongst an expanded painting practice that often leans into methodologies of printmaking, utilizing methods of monoprinting and stencils along with a playful use of paint and material exploration. Within his current solo show, Desert Island on at Coastal Signs, Yeldizyan presents a series of 7 large-scale works on raw loose canvas, installed in a manner in which the works almost engulf the gallery walls and bring the space into a continuous field of symbols and marks. The works themselves harness this heavy use of motifs and symbols as a kind of centering point to the show. References include camels, palm trees, oil pump jacks, Homer Simpson's thirsty bird, ancient fossils, and the triple G's of Canterbury Clothing Company, Union Jacks, and logos of American defense and oil companies. Through the making of the work, Yeldizyan takes these symbols and applies them to various painterly techniques and almost pulls them away from their own inherent meanings and references and pulls him into this place of a pattern-like language with its own set of meanings. I caught up with Anto about the show and his overall practice.
Hello, my name is Anto Yeldizyan. I am a artist based in Tamaki Makaurau. I'm mostly dealing with images. That's mostly through painting and printing, a mix of... I often start in like a bit of archival or historic place and find a way to contextualize it.
Gorgeous. And your current exhibition on at Coastal Signs, Desert Island, presents a series of 7 large-scale paintings on loose, raw canvas. I wanted to start this conversation by speaking a bit to the beginnings of this project. Did it come off the back or draw from another specific project, or rather find its footing in something new?
A bit of both, to be unhelpful. I started with, well, my previous show last year was quite a mixed bag in terms of the format that all the paintings took. I experimented quite a bit on with different like painting supports. There was my usual stretch canvas, and there was boards that I was wooden boards that I was collaging on, silk screening on. And sort of in the last minute, the rush to kind of finish that last show, I picked up the drop sheet that I had lying around in my studio. I tend to really, like a lot of artists, especially painters, tend to be really drawn to that kind of non-subjective mark, that sort of patina that happens.
Kind of scuff the body of the studio.
Patina of the environment. I've always been drawn to that, and that's kind of one of my side quests, is to figure out how to paint with that without being too predetermined. Or the kind of happy accident, essentially, that's that they talk about,
like the chance.
That's always a pursuit of mine. So I really fell in love with the surface of these like chance marks that were happening on the drop sheet while I was kind of frantically getting my show together, the last show. That turned out to be one of my favorite works. Didn't quite crack it then, but I just kind of kept coming back to the drop sheet. Towards the start of this current body of work, I went back to the stretched canvas, back and forth, trying out new things as I usually do, but it was kind of banging my head against the wall. They weren't kind of really jumping out at me.
Yeah.
So I went back to the drop sheet, and once I committed to that, it just all kind of started flowing. And it turns out all the maybe the 6 or 8 months of studio time I had spent on kind of my traditional canvases were actually the preamble, the sort of the testing ground for what I would commit to being like a full loose sheet body of work.
Yeah, cool. And these works within their imagery, they really seem to pull away from the idea of a singular image and scene compared to that of some of your earlier work, and into this more complex use of motifs as a kind of vocabulary to make up the image. The motifs you use draw from various references, including camels, palm trees, oil pump jacks, Homer Simpson's thirsty bird, ancient fossils, the triple G of Canterbury's clothing company, Union Jacks, and logos from American defense and oil companies. I wanted to ask what drew you to this, this use of specific motifs.
I have been attending to themes around the orientalized representation of the Middle East, which is where I'm from, like the entire history of that, sort of starting in like the Romantic period, which I tend to draw images from, all the way through to the 90s, like conflict era through to today, that's still sort of going on. As a kind of painter interested in representing images, often figures, I suppose I started to develop a bit of a problem with representing bodies. And I think that, well, that was partially out of the more recent conflicts in the Middle East. And as someone who's chronically online and obsessed with, you know, geopolitical news, I had just been so awash with really awful images, as I'm sure a lot of you have as well, a lot of terrible images of bodies, basically. And I sort of kind of developed a problem with representing bodies since then, or at least I wasn't sure what to do with the body, since we'd all seen the body in such kind of gruesome ways. So that kind of drew me to think about establishing like schematics for setting up images without relying on representing a body. So like a landscape without bodies, or some kind of scene where you kind of, there's like an index of a body, but the body's not there. It's essentially like kind of like riffing on that sort of modernist motivation of kind of indexing the artist through the gesture, that kind of thing. So yeah, relying on this, setting up like an absence of the body, I guess painting around that problem, and just and using like essentially marks and symbols instead. It's a scale thing too, and which tends to, like, the scale of the sheets are kind of beyond my arm's reach, which means, you know, I have to reconcile like not having control over the surface. But of course they're kind of quite rough, loose sheets, so I already don't have that much control. So it was almost like a part of committing to those drop sheets, quite rough canvas sheets, knowing that I can't really reproduce images on that in the way that I used to with the paint and the paintbrush on a canvas, the traditional support, which is meant to entirely support the surface, whereas using the stained drop sheets is kind of letting the paint fall through it and kind of become a part of the sheet.
And I also, leaning back into your symbols and use of motifs, what kind of conversations and connections are you bringing up by placing this imagery, many of which quite loaded, into the same space? What is this overlap in symbol and imagery provoking for you and for the audience? Yeah,
I don't know if I can speak too much about provoking, but I think what I'm trying to do, in like kind of a dumb and simple way, is kind of trying to get around one of my problems with previous shows here in Tamaki Makaurau, dealing with quite highly specific subject matter, again, to my place of origin. You know, it's one thing to speak to something that's relevant in a current affairs context. It's another thing to speak to something to an audience that that can actually have a way into that subject. So a lot of my subject matter is, in the past, has been a bit alienating to the New Zealand audience. So it's kind of me trying to actively overcome that. And so I would reduce subjects, animals, architectural elements, and so on, into their silhouettes. And in that stencil, through that stencil methodology, kind of aligning them kind of materially, right?
Yeah.
Into silhouettes, they all kind of become symbols. But my motivation for the actual subject matter was thinking about, okay, what are the things that connect us here in Aotearoa to the rest, to the happenings of the rest of the world. You know, I'm trying to like reduce it right down, or look for these like underpinning sort of things that connect us to kind of the geopolitical history of the Middle East, and that was oil and fossil fuels, and which, you know, no one is kind of safe from, essentially. Yeah, I was thinking about drawing those connections through the idea of fossils, and I'd been interested in birds for a while, specifically this image of a seabird and like an oil spill during the Gulf War oil spill crisis. And I thought that was quite, that was sort of from my earlier show that I sort of brought in that relationship between birds who can fly or who can't fly or who are extinct or who are now fossils and are, you know, fodder for crude oil. Yeah, so I just started to be kind of reaching for slightly disparate things, but bringing them together under this like unifying method of turning them into silhouettes via the stencil, right? And then kind of bringing them all into this like same plane. And then what you're left with is, well, for me anyway, is the kind of visual synchronicities between the things. So there's the, especially with like the moa, for example, that big long neck and the, you know, Jurassic scale body with its big two legs, its flightless big body makes me think of those oil well pumps. Images of camels, you know, backlit in the sunset makes me think of images of oil well pumps backlit in the sunset. So it's really informed by like a nexus of images, photography out there. And then in my head, they kind of like layer up, and how can I kind of bring these together, like unify them in some kind of visual sensibility to make essentially like a clusterfuck of references that from afar have like a macro schema, right? They like a lot of times like give rise to like a flag-like arrangement, other times like a rug-like arrangement.
Yeah, and as well as your use of motifs, you also allow for this really playful experimentation of paint within the work, resulting in these textural landscapes of paint across the canvas, bleeds of red flowing paint, and these Rorschach doublings. Do you want to speak a bit to these elements within the work, and also how they play against that quite fixed nature of the symbols and motifs within the work?
The kind of bleeding stains and the Rorschach methodology approach all kind of came out of this one reference that I've had kicking around for years, and that's the Shroud of Turin. I don't know if you have a visual.
Is this
a relic?
It's that butterfly.
It's technically a Rorschach print.
Yes,
but it's supposedly of Christ's body.
Okay, yeah.
That he was wrapped in after his crucifixion, and with a leap of faith, I'm gonna look at this. I look at this relic as a painting. A medieval painting, and in which case it's quite astounding to consider it that way. It's like a 1,000 years before its time in terms of its quite a modern approach to, again, to the painting support. I was thinking a lot about shrouds out of that, and I was thinking about essentially bloodstained shrouds, again, out of a lot of the conflict imagery that's coming out of the Middle East, especially Gaza, in the last few years, circling back to this motivation of communicating this kind of absence of a body, right? And so I think that's where the shroud comes in. It's like it's an index of Jesus Christ. It's an absence of his body, so to speak. And so I took that and this image of these like fossils and started to think about how I can use the material, like the looseness of the canvas, its ability to like just kind of pass paint through it, and which led me to the Rorschach thing. And so I would get these drop sheets off the shelf, and so they come folded, really roughly folded. Been sitting there for months, years, I don't know. So these creases are like really embedded in them, and so I thought that those creases were perhaps the most prominent kind of ready-made aspect of these things. It's the it's the idea of the ready-madeness of the sheets and their like physical form.
Yeah, and the history of their kind of storedness.
Exactly. Being in a warehouse, being on a shelf, and what have you. Mm. And so I thought, like, how do I start these paintings, right? Classic problem.
Yeah.
Staring at a blank canvas. Yeah,
the worst thing.
The worst thing. Yeah. At the head of a new body of work, where the fuck do I start?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought I will dip the folded sheets into a big bucket of paint that I had, mm-hmm. that I very carefully mixed to resemble livestock blood. That's kind of what it ended up looking like. Mm. And then I would dip the folded edges and let that soak in. And so, and then I'd unwrap that, would kind of truncate around these ready-made creases, so to speak. And so I'd have this ready-made grid, so to speak. And then I would use that as the scheme to respond to whether it's this like imprint of a fossil or the grid in which I used to arrange the motifs or mirror the motifs. To create the pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what I saw to be very much like a rug design kind of sensibility, this idea of having the two axes of symmetry, and you kind of just keep reflecting
very,
and repeating
very
motifs.
Symmetrical. There's like, I think, a few where there's like a slight.
There is, yeah, because it is like the. Back to that painted grid thing, the sheets were really roughly folded, and none of them were really square.
Yeah.
So me trying to get this like symmetry out of them was a total wrestle, but that wrestle totally gave rise to
I guess there's like the
wonkiness of them when you really try and find the lines of symmetry and quickly find that it's quite wonky. I think there's a bit of a vitality to that, perhaps.
Also maybe to your use of stencils on that such rough. Ground. It's like maybe you're never going to get quite that perfect like stamp, which logos and things do have. So it's, you've kind of that play between that really fixed, rigid, or like trying to do something that's quite calculated to some capacity, but then allowing for these very human kind of like scuffs and frottages of the body and just like that really materiality of the paint to gain agency within the work.
Yeah.
You did already speak a bit about that process of the dipping in the buckets, but do you want to speak a little bit more to the process of stenciling? And I think there's some monoprinting in there. Yeah, speak a bit more about the different methods you use.
The pterodactyl fossil and this kind of silhouette of an oil well pump with like the two figures that I would kind of quote unquote paint, the rest being just stenciled. So I would do those on the reverse side, fold them over four times, and then kind of soak the paint through so it penetrates.
Yeah.
So none of those were done on the right side. It was all verso to let that. It's that if you really look up close, because the grain, it's such a wide gauge, the canvas, it's quite like pixely, so to speak. And so I was quite into that and how some of the paint would stain through from the back, almost looks like a zoomed in photo reproduction or something, because it's like giving pixely. And then if you paint something on top, it does this like Laura Owensy, like multi, like a parses out all of these layers. It's really scrumptious, like for the eyes, right? And it starts to do that classic painting effect of, you know, creating this like depth thing, right? Something for your eyes to
you're like creating,
dance around,
creating that sense of depth, not through that imagery, but those applications of pain and really making them known.
Some happenstance, some fraught, some really precise. And then the stencils, I would differentiate with the kind of paint that I'd use. So some are quite obviously sprayed and some are painted through. So I'd put the stencil down and I would force paint. Really wet paint with a sponge through it.
Nice.
I would do it quite quickly.
Yeah.
And I really got into that mark as well, because like those initial marks I mentioned with that free soak, you know, blood stainy kind of mark.
Yeah.
They started to kind of speak to that materiality too. Except they take on this form, kind of amorphous. You can sort of see what it is, but once you repeat that over and over again, you get this, you know, my hand is present without it being kind of directly present. It's they're stains. I see them as stains in the form of a subject.
And also in the installation of these works, I wanted to speak a bit about that. They really come together because the paintings are so large and there's, seven of them. They really come together and engulf the gallery space itself and really shift it into this continuous field of painting. Do you want to speak a little bit about the thinking of that engulfed nature of the pieces and that shifting of the gallery space?
I don't know when it was that I decided, but at some stage, it was one of those decisions. It was no umming and ahhing. It was like, this is a continuous work. It's like a Bayeux tapestry that should continuously run along the wall. At the same time, I didn't want a narrative to it. I didn't want a start end. I didn't want any kind of punctuation, so to speak. But because the gallery isn't one big long wall, I had to pivot a little bit, and so I kind of separated these out and I just fixed the gap between them essentially. So as they made their way around the gallery space, a couple of them feel like they're kind of counterintuitively placed on the wall, like the one at the end is sort of like not in the middle of the wall where you would expect to see, you know, a painting hung in that context. Yeah, I was really just motivated by wanting to consider it as a circular thing, like an ongoing thing that's not actually finished.
That was artist Anto Yaldizyan speaking to me about his solo exhibition Desert Island, which is currently on at Coastal Signs until the 18th of April. So be sure to go check that one out.